From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. This week, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist made news, and with quite a splash. After nearly 20 years in the U.S., José Antonio Vargas revealed that he's in this country illegally. When he was 12, his mother put him on a plane in the Philippines, and with the help of a fixer using fake documents, he landed in Northern California. He lived with his grandparents, who were both naturalized citizens, and he fully immersed himself in American culture. But he never knew he wasn't officially American until, at the age of 16, he tried and failed to obtain a driver's license. Vargas has written for the San Francisco Chronicle, the Washington Post, the Huffington Post, and the New Yorker magazine. His story, called My Life as an Undocumented Immigrant, will appear in this Sunday's New York Times magazine, and it's already available online. José Antonio Vargas joins us now from New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you decide to tell your story right now?
You know, last year was really kind of surreal for me. I mean, if you cared about immigration as I do, you know, you're watching all the stories, you know, stream online, and you're watching how a lot of young undocumented kids in their, you know, high school and college telling their own stories about what it's like living as an undocumented person. There were four students from Miami that actually walked from Miami to Washington to lobby for the DREAM Act. And, you know, the DREAM Act was introduced a year after I graduated from high school in 2001. And my question was, there's something here I could do. I made up my mind for sure on December 18th. That was when the DREAM Act failed the Senate. It was around maybe 1 p.m. or so. Then I took a long walk, walked to the Brooklyn Bridge, and that was when I made up my mind.
So you decided at one point that you were covering a story, but actually you were the story.
Yeah. And I think all of us as journalists, you know, I mean, we're trained to be objective, sort of. But, you know, objectivity is a luxury. I mean, I think, you know, I've written enough stories that I think they stand on their own, that no one could question kind of the journalistic acumen and the journalistic ethics in them. But I went on in such great detail in the piece to kind of illuminate just how dysfunctional and broken the system is.
Well, you're a former journalist at this point. Or do you still consider yourself to be a journalist?
That's,
because you're an advocate, and you really, it's sort of hard to be
both.
That's
a very good question. I am a journalist. You know, I go to church every day. It's journalism. It's my church. It's my religion. It's all I know how to do. It's all I've known what to do. And what I'm hoping to be doing in the next few months, leading into the 2012 presidential campaign, is really try to make sure that we're looking at this issue as holistically as possible. You know, 3 years ago, I was on the campaign trail covering the race, the presidential campaign for the Washington Post. And immigration is such an issue that we cover with almost kid gloves. I think a lot of the coverage has been, you know, it's a right issue, it's a left issue. There are some profiles, but not enough. You know, the census just came out, right? We are leading into a minority-majority country. People feel unsettled. They feel like the country is changing. It's changing so much. The definition of American is changing. What is this about? You know, at the end of the day, there are 11 million undocumented people in this country. And if there's one statement that I wanted to make with this piece is, we are not who you think we are. We're not just the people that mow your lawns and clean your hotel rooms and serve you tacos. We're not. We have become woven into the fabric of this country.
Now, I have to ask you, though, as you know, there are millions of illegal immigrants in the U.S., and tens of thousands of them could potentially be eligible for citizenship, or at least
yes,
a path to citizenship under the DREAM Act. But is doing what you've done the best way to help their cause? And I asked this, you know, with someone in mind. I was listening to AM radio this morning, and I heard a caller who identified herself as an undocumented person. In fact, she used the word illegal to talk about her own self. And she said, this is going to make him, you, José Antonio Vargas, rich and famous. He'll get a book contract. He'll maybe even get a movie deal. And she asked the question, what about me? How does this help me? Does she have a point?
She totally has a point, and this is totally about her. I mean, this much I promise you, as I move forward with this, I will certainly make sure that this has not just become the José Antonio Vargas show. That, I mean, the media is going to try to do that, you know, for the next few days and weeks. But as long as I'm, you know, doing this, I'm going to make sure that this is not just about me.
The media will also hit you with some sharp questions and put you
under
a very, very powerful microscope. And,
and
one of the things that people wonder about is this sort of duality in your life, the lies that you had to tell. You're coming out and writing this tell-all at the same time that you're launching this new group called Define American, that is pushing for the passage of the DREAM Act. When you were actually working as a journalist, in order to hold on to that position and that job, you had to tell a series of lies.
Yes.
And journalists are usually known as people who don't take sides in controversial issues. They usually pursue the truth and explain the laws. In your case, you broke the laws and avoided the truth. And some of your critics say that the two words that are missing from your story so far are, "I'm sorry."
Oh, I actually thought that was pretty in the video that that accompanied on the website. If you go to defineamerican.com, "I am sorry for breaking the country's laws, my country's laws. I am no different than anybody else in that I wanted to live my life and I wanted to survive. And if I didn't tell those lies, I couldn't have gotten work and I couldn't have survived." I mean, the hardest conflict for me has been, how do you live honestly with lies? I remember
how hard was that for you?
You know, the hardest thing was, you know, I really broke my grandfather's heart. I'm really hoping that, you know, people reading the piece don't think that I threw him under the bus. I loved him. I loved him very, very much. When I told him that I'm gay and that I'm not going to marry a woman to get a green card, he just looked at me like, you know, the relationship was never the same. I wasn't going to live with that other lie. One was big enough. And back to the critics and this idea that I've lived a dual life. I've written 650 news articles. I've maybe had 9 or 10 corrections in my entire career. I don't think a single source, including Mark Zuckerberg, who I profiled for The New Yorker, or Al Gore, who I profiled for Rolling Stone, have come forward and said, "Oh, I never said that." I have tried to do my job the best way that I could do it. And the work, I think, speaks for itself.
What did you have to do to obtain the journalism jobs that you held along the way? How did you have to sort of fudge information to find work in America's newsrooms?
I needed to learn how to write well. But more than that, I think I really needed to stand out. You know, I couldn't just check the box that said resident alien. I remember the first time I did this was at the Chronicle in San Francisco. If I checked the resident alien box, I couldn't check it because I didn't have the card to give them, because the DMV woman, right, when I was 16, told me that it was fake and my grandfather said I couldn't show it to anybody else. So I couldn't check that box. The other box said citizen. But then in the bottom of the box, it said, "If you check this box, this is against the law." I was maybe 19. And I'm looking at the box, and you know, this is going to sound deluded, but I actually thought to myself, okay, so why don't I check that box? And then why don't I just try to live up to what that word means? Like, what does citizen mean? You know, like, do I just work hard? Do I pay taxes? Do I try to contribute? Do I try to be an upstanding citizen? Do I try to look at other people even though they don't agree with me? Did I try to write really good articles? Maybe that's what that means, at least for me. You know, my grandfather, all he wanted me to do was work under-the-table jobs. That was the plan. Work under-the-table jobs and then marry a woman. That was the plan. And so as I got more and more, quote-unquote, successful, I don't consider myself really a success. I think being successful is being able to actually go to bed in peace. And I don't think I've actually ever had that. America, to me, has been about providing for yourself.
What does your family think of this?
I've had 6 months to kind of prepare everybody.
You can prepare them, but it's another thing.
Oh, yeah.
When outside eyes get an eye, get a chance to
my
look
grandmother,
at it.
My grandmother, my Lola, Lola is the term for grandmother in Tagalog. She's been crying a lot, and she is so scared and worried. And I told her actually the other day, she's going to be 75 next August. I told her 2 days ago that I'm hoping that all of this by then would be over and that she and I, we're going to throw her a really, really big party. And she's not going to have to worry about it. And I really hope you know, at some point that happens.
How about your mom? She's still in the Philippines.
Yeah, she's still in the Philippines. You know, the irony of this, I've spent more time talking to her in the past 2 months than I've ever spoken to her in the past 18 years. You know, the hardest thing to write in the whole essay, when I had to write that I was so mad at her, and then I was so mad at myself for being mad at her. You know, that took maybe a week and 2 pints of ice cream to get down. I want to be able to see her. And again, this is just me. I can only imagine how many other people out there who, because of these laws, haven't been able to see their families.
When's the last time you saw her?
It must have been August 1st, 1993.
Jose, there are authorities who will read your story. There are people who might even listen to this conversation, and they will have to make a decision about what they do. Yeah. If you marked off U.S. citizen on your I-9 forms, or if you used a phony Social Security card, you would be in violation of the law. If you filed taxes under a false Social Security number, you would be in violation of the law. You could be detained because of your immigration status. You could possibly be deported. What did your attorneys tell you to be ready for once you published this story?
Well, lawyers told me not to publish the story at all. One of them, I think, said it was like legal suicide. You know, what is the priority here? Is the priority here me, or is it the priority here the issue? Well, the priority here for me was the issue. The priority here for me was to shine a light and to really tell Americans out there, first of all, I am an American. I am. But second of all, what is it that people like me have to deal with every day? So I've had to basically put the legal side in one corner and say, all right, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and I got to do what I got to do. But this can't just be about me.
Jose Antonio Vargas, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it.
Jose Antonio Vargas, his story, My Life as an Undocumented Immigrant, will appear in this Sunday's New York Times.